Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
We welcome you in. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live, powered by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is the well-traveled Chris Algieri, and we're ready to talk upsets. We're ready to talk big fights. We're ready to talk fights that are being made. We're ready to talk potential big-time fights next week in the heavyweight division. We're just ready to talk, Chris. You are somehow alive. You're back from Las Vegas. I'm back from Orlando. How are we feeling today? You're coming off of that red eye. I don't know how you're awake calling that Munguia upset. Wow. Coffee?
Yep. Iced coffee right here. This is how I'm awake.
Coffee will keep you going. I got coffee as well. Mine's empty. But how you feeling, bro?
I'm feeling the way I'm looking. You know, I got my shades on. You know, like I'm feeling a little rough. But listen, boxing doesn't sleep, so neither do we.
You're on the call for Jaime Munguia getting upset by Bruno Saras, who a Frenchman who had 4 knockout wins in his 25 wins, 27 fights, 2 draws, seemingly losing every moment of the fight, and only landed 18 punches before he landed that final 19th that sent Munguia crashing to the canvas. An unbelievable upset. We're talking about a massive underdog, 16-1 underdog, Bruno Saras out of France, knocks out Jaime Munguia. Wasn't even planning on talking too much about this fight. This was a stay busy fight for Jaime Munguia. So much to unpack here. You being on the call makes it even more incredible. You've been on the call for some crazy fights this year. Takeaways, thoughts, everything, Chris.
First of all, Dan, you said he's from France. Like he said in a way. It was a way. It was a way you said
France. There's never been anyone from France that's done anything in this sport.
I was waiting for the ability to say French pastry when he got knocked out, but he didn't. You know, like a croissant or something.
He went down like a French pastry. He folded like a French pastry.
Right. Yeah.
That would have been nice.
Like, he folded like a crepe. You know, I was waiting for something. some way to say something derogatory.
Munguia, dude.
But yeah, it was the other way around.
Munguia got folded like a tortilla.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, but listen, it came from a Frenchman, so he folded him like a crepe, which I don't even know if Munguia knows what a crepe is, but he does now. Wow. This is what boxing is all about, man. This, I mean, 16-1 underdog didn't look good during the fight either. So, but as the fight wore on, listen, I watched a lot of tape on Saras and what his style was. And I actually thought he was kind of like a French man's version of Munguia. He throws a ton of punches, overhand rights versus Munguia's left hooks. And I'm like, oh, there's going to be so many openings for Munguia to catch this guy. But he came out in an entirely different fashion. He had a game plan. You know, early on, he was trying to trade. Obviously, he got dropped hard. It actually was pretty similar to how Canelo dropped Berlanga. It was like a wicked left hook, boom, right down. It was kind of knockdown where you're like, oh, this could be the end. But he gets up. He's wobbled. He rights the ship, figures it out, but then decides to fight out of basically a shell counter defense for the rest of the fight. And Munguia just fell right into it, man. Just loading up on everything. He looked frustrated. He looked listless. I thought I said that on air after the fight. I felt it during. I mean, he just didn't look like he cared that much. He's just like, I'm going to get this guy out of here. I'm just going to wing big shots. No setups. No kind of being deceptive in any way, shape, or form in terms of his offense. Just coming in the front door, just banging away at both hands. And you saw Saras like getting more and more confidence, being like, oh, this guy's just going to bang in my elbows. Okay, I'll just wait for him to be done, and I'll take my turn. Because he falls off balance. He's open. Munguia's hand position is horrible. So it's just like, oh, I'm just going to wait for him to go off balance and then a fire. And more as the rounds went on, 3, 4, 5, and then finally 6, he took the opportunities. He would just wait. Your turn, my turn. okay, you're done punching? Now I'm going to punch. And Munguia, who had no respect for the Frenchman's power, no respect for what was coming back at him, even though Saras, I thought, I said it right away. I'm like, wow, his hands are way faster than I expected. His hands, you know, he's throwing, and he always throws with conviction, but he just isn't a big puncher, apparently. Apparently not. But yeah, he just waited for Munguia to make a mistake, and then he capitalized, and he just hit him with a perfect shot. And if you look at the replay, Munguia makes a fatal flaw.
Yeah, hand down.
He cross blocks with his backhand, his rear hand, and he puts his left hand out and down. So he's in this position, and the right hand just literally just goes. And that was one of the times actually Saras threw a jab. So he threw like a faint jab just to kind of get your eyes in the, and then shoo, the overhand right has always been a shot. And it hit
what a shot.
Hit nothing but chin. Bang.
What a shot. I mean, snapped the head of Munguia. Credit to Munguia for even getting up. It was a very quick count, but it was irrelevant. The story of this is not a quick count.
Didn't matter.
I'm never one to really get into that debate because it's just like a futile debate. It doesn't mean anything. It's up to the ref's discretion to count it. But I was a little shocked to see a fast count in Tijuana in the home.
Munguia didn't argue at all.
No. I don't know why I even brought it up. You know, shame on me for even bringing it up. But that's not the point. Someone just tweeted at me right before we started recording. What do you think of the count? Doesn't matter. It's irrelevant because he was done, because that's how good of a punch it was from Bruno Saras, who is now burst onto the scene. We're talking upset of the year. There's no doubt about it. Like, you can just throw away that award now because this is upset of the year type of stuff here. And Munguia just looked, I wasn't there, so we don't know the lead up. No one was really like talking about this fight. This was the fourth fight of the year for him. This was legitimately, let's stuff one more in here in 2024, December. It was like 50 degrees in that outdoor stadium. It just was like a quick tune up. I don't know why he even took it now. We'll talk about that in a second. About, are we going to now criticize fighters for taking four fights in a year? Is this going to prevent fighters from being active? Then I hope not, because that argument sucks. But you could make a case that he was overlooking Saras. I mean, they found this guy for a reason. Four knockouts? That's matchmaking. That's what Top Rank looked at. It's like, all right, let's get a guy that's not going to put up too much resistance. Let's get Munguia a win. The Mobili fight is out there for WBC mandatory. A Berlanga fight is out there for big time money. There's a ton of names that went to Caleb Plant. There's a million names out there. But Bruno Saras is a professional, and he gets paid as well. And he went in there and changed his life forever with that unbelievable shot. It was just a great punch. I could watch it over and over. His head snapped. And one of the things that I've been watching over and over on that is the reaction from the crowd.
Yeah.
Everyone. There's one guy with his hands like this immediately. One of his,
and then he's like
the photographer. Well,
did you
get
see?
Up, get up.
Do you see Chavez?
Chavez. Yeah.
Chavez's reaction is priceless.
Yeah.
He literally
he's
goes,
like,
and then he, yeah, and then he puts, he goes like this. He puts his head in his hands for people just listening. Yeah. Chavez literally, he makes like a cringe face, looks
and
at him,
face
and
palm.
Then he knows he's not getting up. Knows it. Chavez Sr. knows he's not getting up. So anyone arguing the count, Chavez Sr.
He did get up, which was nuts.
Which is nuts, but also like he was just rot, he's just hurt and whatever. And then Chavez Sr. just literally put his head, his head in his hands. It was just like, oh man,
dude. Saras only landed 19 punches in the 19th.
He only needed one.
The 19th was the one, but that kind of goes to what you said before. Like, he kind of came out hot, and then he kind of stopped throwing, stopped landing. And, you know, Munguia was winning every round, but I will say that he wasn't looking, like, extra motivated. He wasn't
efficient at all, either.
Right, it wasn't the Munguia that we've seen in the past. You know, he looked physically stronger. Like, what you guys talked about on the first round, you and Christina. Yeah. He looked like his back looked, he just looked like he was in better shape, like physically, but mentally, if you're not there mentally, it doesn't matter who you're fighting on the other side. He could have zero knockouts. He still had, all he had to do was land one perfect punch, and Saras did that. That's the beauty of boxing, man. That's like a surprise. It was 1 a.m. here on the East Coast, extremely long card. I mean, you guys, a four rounder? I was in and out of the card. I was watching the Zone stuff. I was just like hanging out. Wasn't really too locked in. And all right, they got to be in the ring now. And I go back to ESPN Plus, and it's a four rounder. I'm like,
I would like to have known what was going on in the back there, because you know Picasso scores the third round TKO, mm-hmm, scores a body shot. He looked really good actually, but I don't know. It was a last minute replacement. I know Pagazzo's not a big puncher, but also, like, he had a guy who just came in, you know, who got stopped in his last fight. So I would imagine Team Mugia would be aware. This could be a short one. So we should be ready. Apparently not. I would love to know what was going on back there, because the fight was pushed back. Mugia was supposed to walk at 9:10. 9:20 was when the four-rounder walked.
It's crazy.
This is Central Time. Sorry, West Coast Time. Pacific Time, PST. But so the four-rounder walks, they fight. Four-rounder is actually not bad. I mean, it was a four-rounder of two guys who have a combined seven fights. So, you know, it was not a bad display, but it's weird to have a four-rounder right before a big main event in a Tijuana card, especially after Pagazzo just scores this, like, awesome body shot knockout.
Yeah, you get the crowd going. That's just,
and
like...
It was a lull. It was a complete lull. And, and then Mugia comes out, and the crowd stayed lulled, and there wasn't much going on. And then the knockout, but also, like, Mugia was lulled. He was just like, very low energy. He didn't look, he cared. He was listless. That's the word that just comes to mind. He just, even after he got knocked out, he's in the corner talking, and the camera's right in his face, and he's just kind of like
smiling.
He's just like, yeah, you know, it's like, whatever. I got, you know,
I think he was shocked. I think he couldn't believe it. I think he's probably in a state of shock today. I don't know, the jury's been out on Mungia for a while. There's some that think he's an outstanding all action fighter, which I tend to agree with. There are those that think he's overrated because you could poke holes in his resume. But one thing you cannot get on him for is staying active after the Canelo loss. This was his fourth fight of 2024. Yep. And I looked at it as a positive thing. When this fight got announced, I said, look at this. This is great. Yeah. This is a fighter that is not just going to sit back with that Canelo money. We've seen a lot of fighters kind of disappear after they get that big payday, whether you're fighting Canelo, whether you're fighting Gervonta, or you're getting that big money, you kind of disappear. Mungia did not do that. He got in the ring two more times after the Canelo fight. But the flip side of this, was he overtrained? Was his mentals not there? Was he overlooking his opponent? Or are we going to look and say, wait, maybe four fights in a year isn't the way to go. Maybe three fights in a year isn't the way to go. Maybe two fights a year for a high-class fighter is the way to go, especially when you have big-time fights out there, big money to be made. I'm not saying Mungia can't get back to that, but he's going to go to the back of the line. Like, you got to rebuild yourself back up there, and he will be back.
I'm going to pump the brakes on that, because this is not the guy that upsets you. You know, Canelo had four fights in a year. He fought the who was the Turkish guy he fought? Avinid Yildirim. Like, yeah, you take that fight, and like, the guy doesn't deserve to be there. Whatever, you blow him out. Like,
yeah, 10 out of 10 times you're gonna do that. Mungia.
Yeah.
We saw an unbelievable upset. Like, you think Saras would do that again?
But that's the thing about Canelo. The reason Canelo is a star is when he shows up. It doesn't matter who's in front of him. He does what he's supposed to do.
We're seeing that more and more. Whether it's Mayweather or Canelo, like, just the greats being able to be great, or Tank talking about retirement. Like, there's something to be said about Floyd and Canelo, or anyone that's like elite status, is their like longevity. I think longevity in professional sports is one of the coolest things, and one of the things that I admire the most. And other sports too, like Kobe playing for 20 seasons, Jeter playing for 20 seasons, Brady playing plus seasons.
Floyd has an off day, he gets Maidana one, you know.
But he still looks good.
He wins the fight, and then he fights him again, and he smokes him. Like, Mungia has an off day, and he gets starched by a guy who can't punch.
Well, it's
a different thing.
The knock on him too was that his defense was never sound, but he'd never been stopped. Like, look at this, Bruno Saras. Bruno Saras had four knockouts in 27 fights. Jaime Mungia had never been stopped in 40 plus fights. That's
been
boxing.
Down what, once?
Or once nine? Against Canelo.
Yeah.
That's boxing. That's why we watch. That's why they fight the fights. That's why it's the fear of the unexpected, because you never know what's going to happen. Now, Bruno Saras is a name. Jaime Mungia goes to the back of the line. Saras could get Berlanga. I would not be shocked if Eddie watched that fight and now they're placing a call to him to put him in there with Berlanga March 1st, because Berlanga has that comeback fight. Crazy, man. Unbelievable stuff there. 16-1 underdog.
We got to think, though, are there options on him for Top Rank? Because then,
yeah, I don't know anything about that.
He's going in Billy. And in Billy, you know, there's a WBC title that's out there. And he was supposed to be, so Mungia was the number one contender for WBC. They were going to get him and Billy to fight. So does Siraj now take that spot if there's options?
That's
likely.
Well, we don't know. We'll learn soon, but no one was asking these questions beforehand.
Do we get a rematch? Do we get a rematch? Is there a rematch clause?
I know Munguia is probably pushing for the rematch.
But is it in the contract? Because if you're Saras, I don't need to do that. I'll go fight.
I wouldn't do that. If I'm Saras, I'm looking for bigger fights. This is your moment.
I'm gonna say, dude, I just iced you with one punch. What the hell do I need to fight you again? I'm gonna go fight somebody else.
Give me Berlanga. Give me the bag. I'll fight Berlanga in March, and you know, see what I can do there. But, you know, 168 is loaded. You know, Caleb Plant, Christian Mabili, Charlo is now talking about his comeback. Canelo Alvarez. I mean, there's a lot of names. Diego Pacheco, who has a main event next month against Steven Nelson.
Steve Nelson. I got to watch him spar, actually, at the Top Rank Gym yesterday. Nice. So yeah, I went to the Top Rank Gym. I'm working with a young fighter from down here, Dominique Trapp Francis. He's a very, very talented little what is he, super featherweight, junior lightweight, 130 pounder. We were in there in the gym sparring. Steve Nelson was in there training. Keyshawn Davis was
ice cold Steven Nelson.
Yeah, he was in there sparring, getting ready for Pacheco. He looked to be in fantastic shape.
So Keyshawn Davis was there.
Keyshawn Davis was there with his little baby child. Very cute kid.
We're gonna talk about him in a second because he's fighting Dennis Baranchik.
Yeah, he was working the corner for his brother who was sparring, getting ready. Yeah, Top Rank Gym, man. We've been to Top Rank Gym together.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That gym is awesome. Frank Steele.
Hot as hell in there. They had the temperature cranked up in there.
They did, which was nice. Stinks in there. It's too cold in Vegas right now. It's cold. So I walked.
Bro, I was just in Orlando. It was freezing. I was in Orlando for MVP Prospects 10. Freezing, not freezing, but like 50.
freezing.
Like everyone was freezing.
It was freezing in Tijuana. It was like
I know, 50,
it was 52
front.
Degrees at the main event.
It's just a weird night all around. One that Munguia is going to want to forget. One that Bruno Saras will never forget. Mm. I was like, to set the scene, guys, to set the mood. I was watching the fight in my bed. I took the laptop into the bed. It was late. It was like 1:30. You know, I was like, I got to get a good night's sleep so I can record this pod. And I kind of had it on and I'm like half falling asleep. And I hear Christina, oh my God. And then I figured Munguia, like I wasn't watching when it landed. I figured Munguia landed a shot and the fight was over. So I, you know, go to the ESPN Plus tab and I'm like, I see him on the ground and I'm like, he is not getting up. That was crazy. That's beautiful. I love upsets. It's upset the apple cart. We love upsets in boxing. Now, I don't know how far this guy will go, but it'll be a nice little story for next year if he can get, you know, my guess is Berlanga. But then again, we don't know the inner workings.
We don't need the contract details, yeah.
Usually, you know, they'll kind of protect themselves. Top Rank or a promoter will give themselves some insurance. And insurance is either an option on the fighter or a rematch. You've heard plenty of rematch clauses for fights that don't need rematch clauses, but everything is in there. If you're a good promoter, you're a good lawyer.
Spoken from experience, when I fought Ruslan Bavadikov, I was a 16-1 underdog. Might have been 20, whatever. It was like a 15, 16, whatever, 15 to 20 to 1 underdog when that fight was announced. And Top Rank had options on me. So when I beat Ruslan, I fought for Top Rank for another fight.
Yeah. Who against who?
Some guy named Manny Pacquiao. Some
Filipino. Oh, right. Wow, it slipped my mind. Do you ever wish you stayed with Top Rank throughout the whole process?
I wish that they had grabbed me earlier. Yes.
Yeah. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they would have been able to develop me in a different way than I was. And I probably would have been, by the time I got to that title fight, I probably would have been 20-0 with like 14 knockouts.
And you would have fought a few, on some big cards.
And I would have won that title and then I could have defended it against guys that, you know, I would have beat. They would have brought me home, but that wasn't
I would say this, being a free agent, I feel like that's the way to go. Like, you don't want to be too locked in.
It allowed me to fight. I fought on every single promotion.
That's what I mean.
Every network you'd have, and I made a ton of money. So
it would have been great to be the Top Rank from, like, when did you make your debut? 20, how old are you?
24.
So from 24 to 30, it would have been great to have been with Top Rank. But from the 30 on, free agent. So you can
100%.
Make the best deals.
Yeah.
It's not the ideal way, but it's the kind of the way
to be. I made no money until I was 30. I made no money until I won a title, yeah.
And then you could fight a Spence, fight a Khan, fight a all these other names.
I went from ESPN main event, HBO main event, HBO pay per view, Spike TV. Spike TV pay per view main event, Barclays Center. You know, these are all main event cards. I mean, huge cards. And I was, you know, I got paid well. I was fighting the main event on very big cards. So
that's going to be Bruno Saras.
Maybe. We don't know the deal. We don't know the deal. The Frenchman.
I heard afterwards he said, I'm really a middleweight, which is just like another gut punch to Jaime Munguia. I'm not even a 168er. So they moved this. They brought this guy up.
Yeah, I mean, he looks soft. I mean, he looked big. He looked strong. He definitely looks physically strong.
He looked big. He was throwing haymakers all fight, and he was losing. But he ultimately won. Unbelievable.
And I was completely wrong on the call. I'm like, you know, Christine asked me, like, what should he be doing? I'm like, he's only looking for one punch. I think he should get the jab going because Munguia is susceptible to jabs, especially because he just comes in face first. You know, he had a little bit of TikTok, but he gets rid of it. He just doesn't stay disciplined enough. And, he gets hit with shots. And then, he had a game plan. He did. High guard defense. He was tough, strong, physically. I always say, like, guys who do high guard defense, I think are the best high guard defense of all time. Who do you got?
Best high guard defense. I mean, just come to mind. Canelo comes to mind immediately.
Winky Wright is the best. Winky Wright is the best peekaboo high guard defense of all time. So Winky wasn't a puncher, but Winky was strong. So you have to be strong. If you're going to take those blows on your elbows, remember Tito Trinidad just ripping left hooks on Winky? Winky didn't respond to any of that.
Well, glad you brought up Trinidad. He was in Orlando for the WBO convention.
Yeah.
Which I was
good.
At.
He looks good.
He's awesome. He's so much fun. He's just like a legend. He just loves life. And we're about to go live. And they're counting us down. It's chaotic scene there.
It's funny because he wasn't really a nice guy when he was fighting.
No, you can just tell that he's enjoying the retirement as he should.
God bless him.
So they're counting us down. Final minute before we go live on the air for DAZN, me, Wade Plem, and Nonito Donaire. And Trinidad is literally seated right next to the cameraman. And I'm like looking at him, and he's looking at Donaire, and he's shadow boxing Trinidad. He's just so excited. Like, I feel like he might even stand up and get into the shot, which would have been cool as hell. And I'm thinking in my mind, like, this is an unbelievable life that I'm leading. This is such a cool job. Like, I'm about to go live on the air with DAZN with Nonito Donaire to my left. I got Felix Trinidad distracting me. I just want to give him a hug, like a legend, one of my favorite fighters of all time. And then we're live on the air, and I'm talking about a 118 pounder and Antonio Vargas who's fighting in the main event. I'm like, this is nuts. This is crazy. But
hey, listen, are you hearing Dan fluffing himself right now? He's getting fluffed up right now.
No, I just love it. It was one of those moments where you're just, you know how it is. You're so locked in, and you want to be great on the call, especially before you go live. You want to make sure you got all your names right, and you're going to deliver a good live open. But then for a second, I'm like, oh, let's just have fun. Like, Trinidad is having the time of his life. Cotto was there. Serrano was there. Jake Paul was there, obviously.
People don't understand how tough opens are. Opens are tough. Opens are really tough.
Yeah. I always feel like I'm going to fall flat on my face.
I would love to see you fall flat on your face. Like, you just, like, just literally just, like, just fell over. Like, oh, okay, we're just going to keep going. Because in live TV, you just keep going. It doesn't matter.
As long as you do a rehearsal, which we did. We did a prelim open for YouTube. And you pretty much get your talking points.
Oh, I hate rehearsals.
Rehearsals suck. And we taped one, which I think I don't really like taped. I like live. But opens are hard. Opens are way harder.
My first ESPN date, the Miami show, this past June. I was filling in for Hall of Famer Tim Bradley. He was, I think he was either on vacation with his family. No, that was vacation with his family. And I filled in for Tim. And it was the Teofimo Lopez card when he fought the Canadian, what's his name? The Dragon?
Claggett.
Claggett. Steve Claggett. So I filled in for that card, and we're going to do the open. It's the first time I've ever worked on an ESPN card, and they're like, we're just going to rehearse the open. And I looked at Kriegel, Mark Kriegel. I'm like, open? I'm not good. I don't want to do an open. He's like, no, it's okay. Just, you know, get your points together. I'm like, I don't have points. Okay. And then we do the open, and I'm terrible. I mean, bad.
The rehearsed one?
Oh, so bad.
Yeah, because know in the back of your head that you can stop. I don't like doing anything taped.
So bad. And my producer in my ear is like,
what the fuck was that?
He was like,
get this guy out of here.
Okay. Just keep it a little short. He's giving me like points, and I'm just like,
just
I'm
in my head, better.
I'm just like, I'm like, just don't say a word. I'm fine. And then we do the open, and I like smoke it. You saw it. And then in my ear, he's like, oh, good job. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm not good. I'm not
bro,
good.
I felt the same way. When we did our taped one for YouTube, I felt like, oh, man, that sucked. I could have done so much better. Yeah, when we do our live one, you have the adrenaline, bro. Rise to the occasion. Like, that's what we are. It. You're a live fighter. I mean, you're one time. You don't have a
rehearsals. I only get one take, bro.
One shot. Some other fights last night on DAZN. Alexis Roach and Raul Curiel. Awesome.
I didn't see this. I heard it's like really a fantastic fight. I was surprised because I think Curiel's really, really good. And Rocha has, you know, obviously faltered in the past. So the fact that they actually made a great fight, I'm like, it's good because now we have two solid guys in the weight class.
Rock'em Sock'em Robots, bro. It was Roach, I thought was boxing really nice the first half. And then his corner kind of was like, you know, be more aggressive second half of the fight, which kind of, you know, went right into what Curiel wanted. Ended up being a draw. They should run it back as an easy candidate for a rematch. I think it'll get some fight of the year chatter. It's not going to win fight of the year, but it should definitely get in there. Recognition.
Both guys were like, yeah, but that was a great fight. Let's do it again. They both were like, this is a great fight.
Yeah, it was like the broadcast nailed it. They had, you know, Grisham, who's usually wrong, and I say that because he said it himself. I'm always wrong with my scorecards. I thought it was a draw, as Grisham said. Ended up being a draw. That was over
on
the zone.
Nobody cares what Grisham's scorecards are. Come on, let's be honest.
Well, it's impossible.
Todd, I hope you're listening. Nobody cares who your scorecards are.
You never know who's listening to this show. Joe Tess, big time listener too of our podcast. Yes. Shout out to Joe Tess, who was on.
Lupe Contreras is also a big time listener of us. When I mentioned that, dude, I said, "Do we have any Mexican fans?" And he grabbed me the other day. He's like, "Hey, when you said you have no Mexican," he's like, "Hey, I'm here." I'm like, oh, okay,
that's awesome. Love Lupe. He's one of the sharpest dressed and coolest ring announcers out there. So shout out to Lupe. That was over on DAZN. Golden Boy, really fun fight. If you missed it, go ahead and watch that back. So they should run it back at 147. Alexis Roach was super close to getting that Crawford fight last year, and then he had that couple of losses, and now he has a draw. But he always delivers really fun fights. That was on Matchroom.
Santillon stopped him, right? Santillon stopped him. Yeah.
And then Norman.
47 is so interesting.
And then Norman went and stopped Santillon.
Destroyed him, yeah.
And now Norman is hurt, and he's fighting. Boots wants to fight him. Teofimo might fight Boots. It's just like a love triangle.
Talking
love
to top
triangle.
Right people about that. There's there. You
know, well, wait a second. So we're going to get to that. Let's tease it.
All right.
And if this was a radio show, we would say, coming up after the break, we will talk about Teofimo and Boots Ennis. You're listening to blah, blah, blah.
Well, anyone who wants to sponsor our show and put some commercial breaks in there and just pay us a gang of money, it's
possible. We have one beautiful sponsor, PPV.com.
Literally the best sponsor.
Chomping at the bit to get out to Vegas for Benavidez Morel. I was with Morel's people, his promoters this weekend in Orlando. They are very excited.
Dan, they're doing a media event on Tuesday. You should fly down for that.
In Miami.
You should fly down for that.
I was pretty, I feel like I should, but there's a lot of drones in the air right now. I don't know if I want to fly through the drones. I made it back from Orlando in one piece. I don't know if you know what's going on the East Coast. It's just drones.
I don't. There's no drones in Florida. We don't do, because we can shoot them here. Because we have guns. Like, we can just literally, like, just, oh, there's a drone. Bang. Just shoot it right out of the air. And you're not going to get in trouble at all.
I heard about that. MJ Akhmadaliev fought in Monaco. On a card where he was a big time favorite, he did his job. Where
I
want to
go to one of these
not...
Monaco shows. Monaco is pretty cool. I want to.
Yeah, you
dress
wear
like
a exactly
a tuxedo. I want to dress like 007. And I'm gonna drink martinis, shake and not stirred, and I want to watch some fights.
That fits you perfectly. Remember Bivol fought a bunch on those Monaco cards on HBO. That's how Bivol came into the minds of boxing fans. Yeah, they were pushing HBO towards the end of their run. When they were trying to be like Bivol's the next Golovkin, they were like two or three Monaco Bivol feeds that HBO took. I remember that. But MJ Akhmadaliev fought and won, called out Inoue. Some Inoue news here. Inoue Goodman is being moved from December 31st to January 24th because Goodman suffered a pretty nasty cut over his eye. He took to X and social media to show it. So, in a way, it's now January 24th. I like that they just have a quick, it's like 4 weeks after when we're supposed to get it. So we'll see in a way, not on New Year's Eve, which kind of sucks, but we'll still see him. But Akhmadaliyev
also
and
not
Hearn,
fighting this year, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, but still, it's at least it's not like February. At least it's not just scrapped. At least they're not looking for another opponent. It's January 24th, and
good point.
At that point, there's going to be a ton of fights from that moment, that weekend on. It's going to be loaded from there on out. So Goodman suffers the cut. Inoue fight is moved to January 24th. MJ Akhmadaliyev has been calling out Inoue nonstop. Eddie Hearn caught a promo in the ring with his tuxedo on, basically calling Inoue a duck, which is the wildest thing I've ever heard. I understand what he's doing, Hearn. Like, this is his job. Literally his job. Akhmadaliyev had his shot, but he lost to Marlon Topalos. Inoue has gone on Twitter and said those same words. Well, why'd you lose to Topalos, Akhmadaliyev? The fact that you say that I'm scared of you is insane. Like, get back in line. And there's a case for both sides. I don't think that Inoue is ducking anyone. Did Akhmadaliyev blow his shot by losing to Topalos? Yes. Is Akhmadaliyev the WBA mandatory, and did they skip over him to get to Inoue's last opponent and now his next opponent in Goodman? Yes, but I want to see that fight. I do think we'll get it, but I get what they're doing by calling him a duck. They're just trying to enrage the monster.
Well, listen, Inoue's not ducking anybody. I mean, yes, the TJ Doheny fight left everyone being like,
wait, did you see Nick Balls fighting Doheny?
I did.
How?
I weight class up.
How? Whatever. I just don't understand how Doheny looked so bad, and I know he had a back injury.
Don't get me off track. But so yes, everyone was like the Doheny fight. You're like, well, why? I mean, you got Akhmadaliyev right there. Why not fight him? But also, he got dropped by Neri in the fight before. But also, Inoue was also on like how many back to back super bad dudes are you gonna fight? So then Doheny fight, who's also a very capable guy, definitely older, former world champion, whatever, and actually fought in a credible way. But Sam Goodman, you can't knock Sam Goodman. He's a world champion, like this unification fight. So you're not stepping by Akhmadaliyev, who does not have a title, to fight a guy who does have a title. So, okay, who's to say that he doesn't fight him next, which is very possible. I want that fight. I like the Akhmadaliyev in a way fight. I think Inoue beats him, but still, I think it's a fun fight. But I also, I'm really looking forward to the Goodman fight. I'm glad mm-hmm. the fight is still alive. You said it's a bad cut. It didn't look that bad. I made a comment on air last night. I'm like, listen, if that happened in the beginning of camp, we probably wouldn't hear about it.
But oh, that's why. I guess that's why
it's only 4 weeks. The fact that it happened at the very end of camp, at his last sparring session, there's just not enough time for that thing to heal properly. But because, it was a decent cut. Listen, I've been in camps where guys got cut. I never got cut in camp, but I've been in camp with guys who got cut, and they just fought. They just fight. So it depends on when it happens and what. But almost no fighter goes into a camp 100% healthy. I think actually no fighter does. So, cuts, whatever. That's part of it. That was not in a great place. The timing was really bad, but the fact that it's only 4 weeks tells you it's really not that bad of a cut.
I was expecting like February or something. I was expecting a whole new opponent. Yeah. But
you can't. He's the titleist, so they want that unification.
The Akhmadaliyev fight was the fight to make for Inoue a few years ago, but he lost to Topalos, and you can't just get right back onto the saddle
and knocked him out. So.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, there has to be some ramifications for losing at the highest level like that. It was a big time upset for Topalos. So I do think we see Inoue Akhmadaliyev. It might just take a little bit. Like, Inoue has fought everybody. Like, just get in line, Akhmadaliyev. I get what you're saying. Yes. Like, unless he goes to 126 and leaves Akhmadaliyev behind, that might happen. Who knows? But if he stays
in, I wouldn't consider it a duck. I don't consider it a duck. You lost, dude. You lost to a guy he went and beat and knocked out.
And what have you done since the loss? You fought twice. Like, you haven't been active. And, the guy you fought, Akhmadaliyev, the guy you fought on Saturday night, that was a complete mismatch. And you did what you had to do. But it's not like you're going in there against top opponents to get the attention of Inoue. That was the weekend's fights. Some good ones, some upsets. Love that.
We didn't talk about 54 pounder.
Conwell?
Conwell, yes.
Yeah.
Fighting undefeated Argentinian fighter. I saw highlights. I mean, he landed like 17 left hooks in a row and stopped the guy. Like it was
not shocked.
Pretty wicked clip that he got there. Gail Cromwell, he's a problem, dude.
No one's gonna fight him.
Yeah, the risk reward is he's a problem.
That's why. No one is going to fight him. He's with
Bella?
No, he's with Golden Boy now.
Oh.
He could maybe fight Virgil. He called out Virgil Ortiz after the fight. I like Charles Cromwell a lot because I've got to call his fights early on. Detroit kid, super tough. And now he's with Golden Boy. Like you said, like he doesn't have the biggest profile, and he's very good. So in boxing, that is a recipe to be a boogeyman.
He's won the undercard of Haney and Ryan, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we called that fight.
But will he get the biggest names? I hope so. Exactly. I'm being a little more. You're being a little more real. I hope he does. We'll see. We'll have to get into a mandatory position and then.
And you keep putting up performances like that, though. You fight an undefeated guy and you get a highlight reel, 17 left hook stoppage. Yeah, I mean, you keep doing that. You're gonna get it. You're gonna get those opportunities. You can't hide from a guy like that.
Love that. Let's move over to a fight that was announced over the weekend. Keyshawn Davis will get his title shot against Dennis Baranchuk on February 14th in New York City. It is for Baranchuk's WBO title that he won off of Emmanuel Navarrete. Davis coming off of that Lemos destruction. Baranchuk, like I just said, knocked off Navarrete. Love this fight. Kind of came out of nowhere. Didn't know who Baranchuk would fight next. They were dangling him maybe for Tank. They were dangling him maybe against Lomachenko. Not Lomachenko because they're countrymen, whatever. He had a title, Baranchuk, and who was going to fight him? And was Raymond Murataya going to step in there? Apparently not. Keyshawn Davis.
Step in there. It's his spot. I know. I was waiting to jump in and step on you because Murataya, it's his spot, no, dude.
I couldn't agree more with you, but like we've talked about on the show.
How does Keyshawn jump right over Murataya?
He is the golden boy of Top Rank right now.
Okay. That's the problem with boxing. Because it doesn't matter. There's no standard.
Meritocracy doesn't exist.
It's not even meritocracy. Because obviously, it's meritocracy, Keyshawn should be the guy. Because he had such a fantastic performance against Lemos. He jumps the gun. He gets the title shot. Listen, there's governing bodies for a reason. There's ranking for a reason. Murataya has been sitting there waiting. He is the guy in this position. Keyshawn, based on his past performance, jumped over Murataya. I mean, when I heard about that, I'm like, oh, okay, just fuck Murataya. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I get it. But, like, yeah, let's be honest with it. I understand why it's happening. I like the fight. But at the same time, we're literally just saying, fuck you, Murataya. Like, you're not, you earned the spot. You've been in the spot. You've been waiting for the spot. You can sit down.
Well, that's happened so many times in boxing. It's a business.
Yeah, but nobody talks about it, so I want to talk about it. That's all.
I'm glad we did. We're always going to
trust. I love Keyshawn. I love the fact that he's going to get this title shot. I think he's going to win. I think it's awesome. But I also really like Murataya in terms of what his skill set is and where he's been and in terms of rankings and what's supposed to happen.
Yeah. I we're always going to address the whole picture. And Murataya got screwed here. It's a business before it's a sport. Meritocracy, whatever, throw it out the window.
Baby. It's entertainment.
Entertainment. Keyshawn Davis is hot right now. Guy came off an unbelievable win over Lemos. Is the next up with Top Rank. Couldn't be next up in boxing. I like the fight. I think Baranchuk's going to give him hell in there because he's very tricky. I mean, beat Navarrete. I mean, that's pretty impressive. I ultimately think Keyshawn will be the favorite.
I don't think Baranchuk beats either one of those guys. I don't think he beats Murataya or Keyshawn.
Oh, yeah, I think he's going to win, but I think that he's going to push Davis more than Lemos did, and I think he's going to push Davis the most Lemos, that he's in his career.
Lemos didn't even show up, but regardless, Keyshawn is a fantastic talent. I think Murataya is as well. Baranchuk is very, very tough. I agree. I think in terms of level, he's the highest level opponent that Keyshawn Davis has ever faced. If he goes out there and does what he's been doing to the higher level step ups that he's been, you know, Lemos wing one, the Puerto Rican fighter, Pedraza. Another one. Yeah, that was a fantastic display. Again, guys that are a little older, well, Pedraza, a little long in the tooth, but even Baranchuk isn't, you know, he's an older
stopped
guy.
Pedraza, which was impressive.
Right, who hasn't been stopped since Tank at 130. But so that was very, very impressive. And Keyshawn's been very impressive in his last bunch of fights. I get it. And Muay Thai did have, you know, a couple missteps. Didn't lose, obviously, but he had trouble with Tevin Farmer. You know, the fight where it wasn't that spectacular, but I don't know. He's been lying in wait for a very long time.
Yeah. So Davis will be fighting Baranchuk. I expect Davis to win and be a titleist now. And that opens up a lot of possibilities at lightweight. We know that Tank has a belt with the WBA. We know that he doesn't really care about belts, or he's talking about retirement and all that stuff. Shakur Stevenson has a belt. Shakur and Keyshawn are like very good friends. Very, very good friends. They've said they would never fight each other. That's a debate for another day. Then there's Lomachenko, who has a title, who is retired. Is he not retired? Turned down fight with Tank. They should have fought already. It's a very strange division right now. But Keyshawn Davis gets his shot. He should win, and then we can look to unifications. We talked last month about how Keyshawn Davis versus Tank Davis is a lot closer than you think. If you believe in Tank fighting one more, like one last time or whatever, two more times this year, I mean, Davis is going to be on the short list. Keyshawn Davis, if he wins February 14th, that's exciting.
Well, he's been very vocal about getting that fight, which doesn't hurt. And
like, imagine if he wins, how much more that will be banging that drum.
Well, dude, once you have a title, that's the thing that people don't understand. Like, yes, you want to be a world champion. Being a world champion, like, you enter that room where now you're a world champion. Keyshawn Davis is not a world champion, has not been a world champion yet. So that would be his first world title. He enters the room of the very elite class of being a world champion. But then it's also a negotiating chip where now you can look to get these big fights. Hey, listen, dude, you want to be unified? I got the title. I mean, Keyshawn likes to say that he doesn't care about titles, but
it's still a thing.
I'm sorry, Tank said that. Excuse me, but it's still a thing. It's still a negotiating tip. It's still, you know, going to raise your earning potential.
Well, it's a marketing tool as well.
Of course.
That's, I mean, you say it's a two chip. Belts on the line. Davis, Tank. You know, if you have a problem with his resume, now he's fighting a young, hungry champion in Keyshawn.
In his weight class.
I'm not trying to go too far ahead here because Baranchuk's going to be tough, but Keyshawn wins. Like, he's probably not going to... I mean, Lomachenko, I'd give him a lot more of a shot to get to fight Keyshawn than Shakur because
or
of the
Tank.
Friendship.
Yeah.
Or Tank. Yeah, I would think Top Rank will go to Lomachenko first.
And I think Lomachenko would take the fight with Keyshawn, being like, you know, I can use my experience. He's not such a physical fighter the way that Tank is. He's not such a deceptive fighter the way that Shakur is. So I could see Loma being almost the way he kind of took on Haney, being like, I can probably get this guy. Or like,
I have no idea what to think about Lomachenko. I have no idea.
You can't, because, you know, he's his own man. He's a master of his own fate. And he's long in the tooth. He's, you know, getting up there. How old is he?
But he has a belt. He has the IBF belt too. It's not just like, you know, he has some trinket. Like, this dude has the IBF belt in Lomachenko.
Yeah, but he's above the belts. He can do what he wants. He can turn down a Tank Davis fight and not get stripped.
I think Top Rank, if Keyshawn wins, I think Top Rank goes to Loma first. Do you want to fight Keyshawn Davis?
I agree.
That doesn't matriculate, then they have to look to Tank and they have to try to make that fight. They got to the 1 yard line with Lomachenko, PBC and Top Rank working together.
I really thought they were going to go the way around. I thought they were going to have Muay Thai fight Baranchuk. I think Muay Thai wins that fight and then make the Keyshawn Muay Thai fight for the title. Because then,
well, that could be next too.
But the problem, so the issue about doing it next is, it's a bigger risk with less reward. If you have Muay Thai win the title first and Baranchuk, not saying he absolutely would, but I think he would. Wins the title, let's say, saying in a perfect world. He fights Baranchuk, he wins the title. Now you have another fighter on your roster as a world champion, and then you match up two guys. Now it's Keyshawn Davis and Muay Thai. You know, they expect Keyshawn to win that fight, I would think. Not necessarily that he would, but regardless, you've already gotten this guy to be a world champion. Keyshawn's going to be a world champion eventually, whether he beats Muay Thai in that fight or not. He's going to be a world champion. I just thought they would get, you know, Muay Thai a world title first and then have him fight Keyshawn. But, you know, they're doing it a different way.
Well, they could put Muay Thai on the card on February 14th and kind of build that up as an insurance policy. Like, hey, if Davis wins, Keyshawn, he'll get Murataya next. That would be interesting. We'll see where they go. All the plans got flipped upside down when Berancic upset Navarrete, who we just saw looking amazing at 130.
Well, but then they flipped the script because Navarrete went back down to 130 and looked fantastic against Valdez. Yeah. And now
and he should
now,
stay there.
But all, he's definitely going to stay there. But also, you got the Espinoza fight. Navarrete Espinoza is a banger.
Yeah, that's probably that next.
That makes way too much sense. Why would you not make that fight? You got Espinoza, who is the uncrowned new Mexican star in those lighter weights.
Especially with Munguia going down, too.
Well, that too. You could potentially actually, that's a really good point, Dan. I didn't even think about that. Because you saw Espinoza in the dressing room of Munguia, right?
How about the Mexican power rankings right now? It's Canelo number one. Oof. Would you say Espinoza's number two?
I think so. Yeah. I think Espinoza now moved himself into position to where he could actually become the face of Mexican boxing. But you can't do that until you beat Navarrete. If you're in those weight classes, you cannot be that guy until you beat Navarrete.
I put Navarrete too then over in the Mexican power rankings.
It has to be.
Fun idea.
So it would be Canelo, Navarrete, Espinosa. And that's
I'm trying
three.
To go through the weight classes. There's probably four. Someone it's, down the lower weights.
It's crazy that Venado is like off the chart now. Like completely.
Yeah, 130, 135. There's no one Mexican. 140. No Mexicans. 147. No Mexicans.
Yeah, 154. Barboza's 154. More American.
160. Yeah. We're getting into the higher weight classes where there's not a lot of Mexicans at all. Yeah, it's tough.
Zerto. Zerto Ramirez.
Oh, yeah. Put him in there for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely in there. He's top five for sure.
Yeah.
That's he cool. might. He might no. I would put him a bit above Espinoza. He's a
who?
Three Zerto. He's a three division.
Yeah, just off
champion.
Of yeah, just off of
he's a three division world champion. Yeah, he's historic at this point. Three divisions is a big deal. 68, 75, and now cruiser. Also being a Mexican cruiserweight world champion, which has never been
pretty big. He can go to heavyweight too.
Yeah,
job's not done.
I think it will.
How about this three-week stretch in the lightweight division? February 14th, Keyshawn Davis versus Dennis Berancic. February 22nd, Shakur Stevenson versus Floyd Schofield. March 1st, Tank Davis versus Lamont Roach. That's a fun stretch at 135.
That's my birthday weekend, so we're going to be in New York for that, yeah?
Which one? March 1st?
Yeah.
Yeah, we will be. Barclays, baby.
Everyone listening, my birthday is March 2nd. So
you're a birthday diva? You wear the tiara and the crown?
Send your cards to Inside Boxing Live. Tell Dan how much you love me.
Send your messages. I saw that they've sold 10,000 seats. Voicemails. Numbers always open. The hotline is always ready. I saw that they sold 10,000 seats already for Tank versus Roach.
That's at the Barclays Center?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that would be sold out. That Tank, one thing about Tank, dude sells tickets.
Guy sells. He's one of the hottest tickets in the sport right now.
I would say in like entertainment, because his fights bring out a whole different crowd. But that's a fun stretch.
Spence used to be up there too, and now he's obviously out.
Spence, 2019 Spence was something, man. When he, after Spence
beat. Pay-per-view buys. Oof.
After Spence beat.
Danny?
Porter. September, before the car crash. September of 2019, yes. He was just top of the list. There was a PBC pound-for-pound list in terms of marketability and who's number one in PBC. It was him and Wilder neck and neck in terms of box office and visibility and all that. Obviously, the car accident just derailed him, and he still came back, and he's potentially fighting.
And beat up Danny Garcia, which was very impressive.
He is coming back
to
fight Fandora. That fight is set at 154. Just will only be for the WBC title, not the WBO.
Imagine Spence shows up and is like, even a fraction of what Spence used to be beats Fandora. So even if
I would not be that shocked. Like I favor Fandora. I think Spence has 2 feet at the door.
I think 80% Spence beats Fandora.
I'd not be that shocked if Spence beats Fandora, only because Fandora just has a few holes and he's so inconsistent.
A few?
But being nice. Has a few holes, inconsistent, could get into a brawl when he should box when he should brawl. Spence, one last go. I would not be shocked if Spence wins.
Spence makes you fight. he makes, and he's so rough on the inside. And I watched Fundora, and I thought that Tim Zhu missed a lot of opportunities to take advantage of Fundora on the inside, because Fundora is not a good inside fighter. He's got so many holes. The body punching is all there.
Even though he spends a great body puncher, majority of his time on the inside, Fundora, which makes no sense.
Yeah. But Spence is such a better inside fighter. He rips the body with both hands. He jabs his way in with that southpaw jab, which is a hard pounding jab. And then once he gets in there, he just rips the body on both sides. And once he gets going, he's kind of like he beats the drum. He's like, dung, dung, dung. He's not a really fast fighter, but once he gets going, if you let him get on his rhythm, he just doesn't stop punching.
Yeah, that was some news. WBC had their convention. And one of the biggest things to come out of that is Spence is ranked number one by the WBC at 154, despite never fighting at 154, despite not fighting.
He's been inactive for 18 months.
And the WBO has said, no, we're not sanctioning this fight as a title fight. So Fundora's WBO title will not be on the line against Spence.
Yeah, but does Fundora take the fight? Of course.
Yes.
Money. Yeah.
Yes. This has been the case the whole time. Fundora taken many fights. I like the fact that Fundora, after that crazy fight with Zhu, has sat out. I want to see him fight, but I think for his career, that was probably the right move. In hindsight, look at Zhu. Rushed into another fight with Bakram, got destroyed. So as much as I wanted to see Fundora fight, I wanted to see him fight again this year. He's going to be really free. It's going to be a year out of the ring after that war, which is probably the right thing.
You're killing me. You're killing me. Because you're talking about Fundora sitting out and how it benefits him. You're talking about Munguia.
Because he was in a rough fight.
Who took this fourth fight.
I'm not saying they should.
So now, like, when guys are
advocating for it,
why they're not busy, you're just giving them
okay, fuel. So if you were Fundora's manager, after that fight with Zhu, you would say, hey, Rush, get back in there for the end of the year.
Don't ask me about being a manager. If I'm being a manager, I'm
looking okay, as an head. Analyst, as what you are now, a talking head, do you think that Fundora should have fought after that crazy fight, broke his nose, got a Spence fight lined up?
Go fight. If you lose, you come back. As an analyst now in this stage, you can lose. Just come back. Come back and fight. Look at Majumov.
He's had something lined up.
To Crawford. You know, like, you lose. Listen, back in the day, guys used to get knocked out and come right back and fight.
It's different now, though.
I know, but that's the problem.
PBC has X amount of dates, and Spence fight was lined up. But you can use Zhu as an example. Zhu should, I mean, he got the worst of it. He got the brunt of it. Zhu got the worst of it of the two, of him and Fundora. Zhu had the cut. Fundora had the broken nose and took some punishment. But Zeus definitely should have not have been in there in October. He should have waited. It's a debate, but we will get Spence.
He should not have come back with Murtaz Aliyev, that guy. I remember I told you I was having dinner, and just randomly Murtaz Aliyev's last fight came up when he fought Colby. Yeah. And like literally, it was like I sat down to look up, and I'm like, oh, it's boxing on. And it was round one. And I texted our man, Paulie Malignaggi, and I'm like, yo, this guy's a nightmare. Tim Zhu is going to have a tough fight.
And then wrong opponent.
3 days later, he gets knocked out.
Rush back, wrong opponent. So there's arguments to be made on both sides. But we will get Spence Fundora. It's just a matter of when next year. I think April or some. It's going to be slotted in. What other new? The Benavidez Morel winner will face the Beterbiev Bivol winner, according to the WBC. Yeah, I mean, we've heard this before. Heard this before. A lot of moving parts. Benavidez has been mandatory for Canelo. This doesn't mean much. I'm sure Benavidez just looked at that and was like, all right, great. I heard this before.
What else is new?
What else? I never got the Canelo fight. Hopefully I get the Beterbiev-Bivol winner at a new
weight
class.
I don't think Benavidez cares, though. He's just going to stay busy. They're paying him well. He's in a good routine of training and getting fights pretty consistently and fighting guys that he's getting a lot of a good platform for. His profile just keeps growing. I don't think he cares.
Just lastly, you're not familiar with Michael Benson, are you?
Writer?
Not a writer. He is a Twitter account. Is a real person. But what he would do is he would copy and paste a lot of news in boxing and tweet it. And he was like an aggregator of boxing news. He was always first on the case. So if like Mike Coppinger would announce a fight, like for instance, this Baranchuk Keyshawn Davis fight, Coppinger would tweet it. This guy, Michael Benson, maybe a minute later will tweet it again and would do that all day long with tweets, with screenshots. He was just like his own little boxing scene platform as a person. And he accumulated a lot of followers and he got pretty big where he was, you know, people would just go to his Twitter account and get all the boxing news they need. And there were some that looked at it as kind of like a cheap way, engagement farming, like ripping writers off. He did credit
kinda like,
them.
Kind of like Fat Jewish who would just like steal people's Instagram.
Yes. Steal people's jokes and like, he'll give you a credit, but you're really like, do your own reporting, Benson, or like do your own writing. We never see your face. We never see your fights. But he made he got up to like 350,000 Twitter followers. And there's no doubt about it. He was becoming like a major news source in the sport. Turns out over the weekend, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, who just bought Ring Magazine, bought this guy's Twitter account. Oh my and God. It's no longer Michael Benson. It's now Ring Magazine. And apparently they gave him a lot of money, which is just nuts. I didn't even know this was a thing.
You better not sell Inside Boxing Live. I will
for the right price.
I will kick your ass. You better not, dude.
Bro, I heard a lot of money.
We are a standing beacon of truth in this sport, and it's rare. So, guys, listen. If we sell out, it's Dan. It's not me.
If they offered me a lot, you'd never see me again. Gone. Benson, we never saw you to begin with.
And then I will start Outside Boxing Live, and we will talk
outside
about
boxing.
Things.
Outside Boxing
outside
recorded.
The ropes. We will talk about Outside the Ropes boxing.
How crazy is that, though? This guy, if you're a boxing fan and you're on Twitter, you know who this Benson guy is. He kind of was like the butt of jokes. Just Turkey, man, Saudi. I understand the business move.
I don't like controlling the media. This is like, I don't know. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
I've seen this happen in different ways. You buy Twitter accounts. Ring Magazine pretty much bought this guy Benson's followers and his audience, an engaged audience. It's been done before in media, but to see Michael Benson just disappear when we didn't even know who he was to begin with, and Turkey involved, Saudi involved, Ring Magazine, which is now under the management of Saudi Arabia. They're
so we might
hard.
Get bought out soon. If that's what you're saying. Like you're saying like.
I'm listening. DMs are open.
Let me do the negotiating in that case.
We'll bring everyone to the negotiating table. Me, you, Bob Canopio.
I'm cutting you out. You're out.
Benson, we barely knew you.
You can take the lion's share, but I'm starting Outside Boxing Live.
Outside Boxing recorded. All right, everybody. Have a great week. We're back at the end of the week to preview Tyson Fury, Alexander Usyk 2. Man, do we need a big fight in boxing. It's coming next week. I have to really go back and watch the first one, figure out if I think Fury can do it and stop the theatrics. I don't know. There's so many intangibles. I can't wait to peel it all back with you Thursday or Wednesday, right?
Either way. Yeah.
Either way. But I'm talking about that fight. It's going to be nuts.
Yep. I'm doing a watch along for ProBox TV, so you guys can tune in and check out.
Yeah, I might do one of my own. A dueling one with you. I might do my own.
Come join us.
That'd be sick.
We'll fly you down. Come down.
That'd be awesome. I need to get out of New York. It's too cold here. All right, everyone. Enjoy your week. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you have a 7-figure offer to buy this platform. Goodbye.